such force, let alone keeping sending Mandela to jail, if it hadn't had such thoroughgoing support from this end, from here in Washington.
Well, Andrew Coburn, I want to thank you for being with us. And of course, President Obama has continually talked about the inspiration Nelson Mandela was in his own life and activism. Andrew Coburn, Washington editor for Harper's Magazine, in 1986 wrote a piece about the CIA's involvement in the capture of Nelson Mandela. His latest piece on John Kerry and U.S. foreign policy, which we hope to talk to you about at a future time, Secretary of Nothing. It's out now in Harper's. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aramonte Nerman Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Akov, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. And yes, Jim Hightower is coming up later. We've got a couple great comments, pre-recorded, of course, from him, our national progressive commentator. One about whose idea was Obamacare anyway? And the other one strikes near and dear to my heart. What about those adjunct professors at those colleges, those part-timers? And when I first introduced our guest in the studio, and it's a great show today, we have a special guest here too. Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director, is here.
I am here. Can you hear me?
And yeah, and John Conroy is here too, our WHFR staff member, part of the team. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you, Jay. And also, just kudos to Dennis for getting that new position with our station.
Oh, thank you. What new position?
News director.
Oh, no, okay.
We're on the wrong mics.
I know, we have some things mixed up here.
You take that one. A little bit of radio in the making.
Wow. No, you're
saying
that. Okay. It's like the Chinese fire drill with microphones. There we go. All right.
Okay, I'm turning up microphones for all of our guests here. We have, besides John and Dennis, we have Lisa Clayton Hicks here. Hicks Clayton. I got it. Dyslexic today.
Tricky. It is.
That's okay. Of course, the Journal is local news and views. The things that matter to you most are right next door. And so we've got a lot of stories to cover today. And, of course, our special guest. I'm going to turn it over to Dennis to interview Lisa.
Lisa, thank you for joining us. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the city of Dearborn Heights, and we try to summarize it or whatever each week. But to have you here to talk about some of the things, we really appreciate it. Big program. It's called PATH. Could you please explain it? What is it and who is it for?
Well, absolutely. To tell you a little bit about PATH, first I want to say thank you to WHFR Radio for having me and providing the opportunity to share this news about this great program. This is a educational class. It's a six-week series that meets once a week. PATH stands for Personal Action Towards Health. It is a class sponsored by the Senior Alliance, and the Disabilities Commission of Dearborn Heights is bringing it to the residents. This is for any individual who is experiencing and living with chronic pain. Chronic pain through different illnesses or conditions. The class itself, as I said, it meets once a week. We're offering both classes at both the senior centers. At the Berwyn Senior Center, those classes are starting on Tuesday, January 14th. And again, meeting weekly. The time is 10 a.m. to 12:30. And the other classes will be offered at the Eaton Senior Center on Thursdays, starting January 16th, from 12:30 to 3 p.m.
Okay. Now, there's I imagine, just based on this being, you said this is completely free?
Absolutely. PATH is a fun, free, interactive workshop that helps you to feel better and improve your health. We're addressing issues including nutrition and diet, exercise, how to communicate better with your healthcare workers as well as your family members, which is sometimes a challenge, overcoming stress and relaxation techniques, ways to increase your energy, which is always a good thing.
Right.
We increase the energy levels, handling everyday activities, making everything more easy for you. And also, the bottom line is staying independent.
So these are like basically, they're strategies.
Absolutely.
I know, and you've talked about it over and over again as far as it being a better, a higher quality of life for these individuals. It is for everybody, but specifically, you said people with chronic pain as well as seniors, true, right?
That is correct. It is what is open to everyone, the aging, the elderly population, the disabled as well. Vets, we're encouraging them to participate. Anybody that has a chronic condition that they're living with every day. Because the bottom line is, let's talk about managing it versus it managing us. Because living with chronic pain and living with a chronic illness or condition is challenging.
Oh, sure.
It can take away your independence. And, you know, that becomes a frustration for everyone, especially for that person. We really want to reach out to those folks.
Now, because I have a feeling it's going to be pretty much in demand, there has to be, I would think, some kind of application process and deadline.
Well, you know, for PATH, for the PATH classes, very easy to do.
Sure.
All you need to do is pick up your phone or get in contact, whatever is the best means for you, with our senior center coordinators. Again, that's at Berwyn. You would be able to give them a phone call. And also at the Eaton Center, that's the other location. Or if you have questions in general, you can call Sarah at 734-727-2073.
I just had to ask this question, so I'm not calling Sarah. Talking to Lisa directly. Does it have to be a Dearborn Heights resident, or you seem to imply it could be anyone?
It could be anyone.
Okay.
We just want to reach out to those who have that need, that it will benefit.
Okay, great.
The other thing I want to mention is that all of our PATH participants will receive a free Living a Healthy Life with Chronic Conditions book and a Relaxation for Mind and Body CD.
Okay.
In all of the classes, again, they're running an hour and a half, so a healthy, nutritious snack will be provided as well.
And that, so, and you said that the deadline for application is January 10th?
January 10th. Okay. Yes, we'd like to know if you're coming. We'd love to hear from you.
And this is the first time that Dearborn Heights is offering this. If this is as popular as I assume it will be, I mean, this could be an ongoing event. And you said this leads to other things as well. It's not just this particular workshop. There will be kind of things that go out about diabetes maybe. Or
absolutely.
It's an all-encompassing, healthful way.
That is correct, Dennis. PATH, the Personal Action Towards Health, is a basic class. It introduces you to a little bit of everything that's good for health management and, you know, basically being empowered, so to speak, to be accountable for your own health and working with your physician. But we do offer and will offer the other classes following in the future. You'll see that through 2014. There's the diabetes class, diabetes PATH class. There's one specifically for chronic pain management, self-management, and healthy eating for successful living in older adults. So there's several opportunities.
Did we mention what health organization or group is sponsoring this?
Well, it's the Disabilities Commission of Dearborn Heights.
Okay,
but these programs are through the Senior Alliance.
Okay.
And the PATH class, I would be remiss to mention this, was developed by Stanford University.
Okay, okay.
So there was
I've heard of them.
That's a little college somewhere else.
So, yeah, we'll give them a little credit, okay? A little credit to Stanford.
Oh, I appreciate it. And so, like you said, we can call the Berwyn or the Eaton Centers, the directors there, either Cheryl or Christine. And but while we have you here, can we move on? Can I ask you something about the recent meetings? Stuff was in the news, obviously, and there were two things in particular. A glowing review regarding the financial audit, a positive one for the Heights. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, we can. You know, our audit is completed by Plant Moran. And you give kudos to them. They do a wonderful job auditing all of the departments and the management and how, you know, the taxpayers' dollars are spent and the accountability and transparency as well of that budget. So we did see improvements, because this is for last year,
right?
Last fiscal year. We did see some improvements. The city is always working towards improvements through the administration, the city council members, and department heads to streamline some of those spending. But what's great is we saw a reduction in our deficit. As you know, we did have over a $5 million deficit, which is part of the deficit reduction plan, and that was reduced significantly. So we are not only on target, but we're exceeding what was expected.
Okay.
So we're making progress.
It's interesting. And in the Times Herald, they have the quote from Plant Moran manager Alicia Davis. She said the same thing. She said, you were able to have a positive result in terms of adding to your fund balance or reducing or outperforming your deficit elimination plan. This increase, though, is interesting, and I know this has been in the paper lately. The increase is based on additional revenue gained by through the city property taxes, mm-hmm. as well as money generated for the 20th District Court. And I know that I hear it all the time when I'm out and about in the city, and I have people say, "Well, I have to pay a parking or not a parking, but a moving violation, so the city can lower its reduction." And that was something again Tom Barry addressed head on mm-hmm. back then. But you know what, Lisa, it's working.
Well,
it's
I know
weird
yeah.
how it's working.
Well, Dennis, I just want to say one thing to that. And certainly I can appreciate the concerns that our residents have or anyone who has that experience. But when it comes to public safety, and you're talking about traffic control and the safety of residents, the safety of anyone who's driving our streets, our public streets, we would expect our officers to be doing their job, which is what we feel they're doing. It's not meant to be a money-generating I'm going to ticket you just so we can generate more funds for the city. That does come with the territory, but that's also a motivational factor for people to abide by the law.
Sure.
When you and we had this problem, and I hate to go back to this horrible accident with these kids at Ford Road and Telegraph,
yeah.
but that certainly makes you stop and think, and we need to be enforcing those laws and the rules of the road. Yes, you do need to slow down. You do need to follow the speed limit, and you do need to stop at red lights. We had a sting out there. The number of tickets generated, it wasn't meant to be revenue generating. It's a safety issue.
And it's I think it's I don't think it's a coincidence mm-hmm. that people complaining the most are the ones that are speeding and getting ticketed. So there you go.
But unfortunately, it comes with the territory, right? Unfortunately.
Another wonderful article in the paper mm-hmm. outlined that your council approved a 7% water increase.
That is correct.
And I think it's a little more far-reaching than people think mm-hmm. regarding just, well, I drink a glass of water, I'm paying for it. There's a lot of things that go into that particular fund, correct?
That is correct. I mean, the biggest piece I think it's important to do is to communicate and provide information to our residents to help them understand how this comes about. It's, you know, we of course get our water from Detroit, and when that comes, we're getting passed on an increase as well. However, for informational purposes, let's let the residents know what Dearborn Heights does is we smooth it out. There's a projection of 5 years, and we smooth it out over the 5 years. So that way we don't have sticker shock, because, and I have tracked this with other communities that don't smooth it out, where they only pass on what they receive. Let's say it's 3% 1 year. But then the next year it's passed on, and you're looking at 23%. I've seen one community as high as 50% increase. I would never want to pass that on to our residents. We all live on fixed incomes, and certainly if we smooth it out, it makes me think of my DTE bill. I want to know what I'm paying and what I'm getting into, right?
Right.
So I can budget, and I can live within my means and know what to expect.
Right.
So that's what happens with this bill. But you made a good point, Dennis, is that it's not just about a glass of water. You're looking at sewer. You're looking at maintenance and replacement of infrastructure, which we all know is happening in our communities. So we have to address those issues. One thing that I had mentioned was the valve to try to regulate, because we do get surges. The city of Dearborn Heights by itself stands on over 200 water main breaks a year, which is very expensive and costly. We have to repair those. We have overtime with employees when it's the weekends and evenings. We also have to return the property exactly how we found it or try to. So there's a lot of after work that goes on that you see after the fixing the line. There's more that goes into it and more expense. So we need to remember that's costing all of us money.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that this story will be in this weekend's or the Sunday edition of the Dearborn Press and Guide. We got it directly off their website.
Good point.
But Dennis and Lisa are intimately connected at the Dearborn Heights Council. So not personally intimately.
I think we know what you
mean,
Jay.
Yeah, they were there for it, and this did happen. And also, you said, well, Plant Moran said their budget was fine, and now they got to raise 7%. Okay, they have two separate budgets.
Good point. I mean, the
water department has its own budget. And the detail here in terms of who to blame, it's not just Detroit Water and Sewage, although their rates went up 10%, but it's also Wayne County. They have sewers that have to be maintained that feed the water around, and their rates went up 5%. So you sort of... went for the middle sum of 7%.
But you also said earlier that actually when you projected this particular bill, you're under that projection.
We were. We projected it at 8% as part of the five-year plan for this water rate, and we were able to decrease it to bring it down to 7%. So it is something that can be adjusted when we look at the numbers as they come in and keep it real for all of our residents. That's right. What we want to do.
I thought it was exciting. You're buying. You are going to go ahead and buy a new Vector truck, mm-hmm. a Vector truck, and they cost about $400,000. But the other one is old. You're getting a trade-in, and you've got to clean those sewer lines and storm sewers.
Absolutely.
And of course, as you said, replace them and fix them if they all of a sudden break. So that truck is essential, and it's good that you're going ahead, because you always have to look into the future with your expenses to try to balance it out.
Absolutely.
Not
absolutely.
The short-term cut, cut, cut.
And I love Tom Barry's quote. He says, can we get about 5 more years out of it?
Right. No. You always ask the question, can we stretch it, or can we repair it, or do something else? But in this case, the answer was no, we were not able to.
Awesome. I know in any city, if they can get away with getting more money, I know absolutely. Each department will. Lisa, thank you so much for sharing some time with us and sharing this information. Again, if people are interested in the PATH program that is through the senior centers, Berwyn and Eaton and Dearborn Heights. And we'll look to you in the future to give us updates on some of the things going on in Dearborn or Dearborn
Very
Heights.
Good. Well, thank you.
And now we're going to answer that proverbial question. Whose idea was Obamacare? Here's Jim Hightower.
A quote, message of the week is handed out. Talking points, including lines of attack, are distributed. Social media tactics are taught. New messaging tools like digital flyers are deployed. Opinion articles are pre-written. And a 17-page playbook lays out the strategy. All this and much more is part of an all-out centralized military-style assault that House Republicans are making in a desperate attempt to kill Obamacare, with their larger mission being to crush the idea that every American deserves good quality health care. The campaign is being directed through Speaker John Boehner's office, with all 231 GOP members expected to take marching orders, penetrate every media market, and stir up as much negative noise as possible to sabotage Obama's Affordable Care Act. Most members of this anti-care brigade, however, seem blissfully unaware of an explosive irony in their furious assault on Obamacare. It was their idea! While Democrats long advocated that universal health care should be achieved by simply extending Medicare to everyone, Republicans always countered that coverage should be run through the insurance corporations, with a requirement that younger and healthier people buy into it. Richard Nixon proposed this concept in 1974. Then, in 1989, the Heritage Foundation, a Republican-allied think tank, basically proposed the full privatized system embodied in the ACA, including the individual mandate that everyone buy an insurance policy. Such far-right-wing GOP Congress critters as Senator Orrin Hatch and Newt Gingrich became leading champions of this scheme, the very one that they and fellow Republicans are now trying to demonize and slay. This is Jim Hightower saying, the deeper irony is that should the GOP succeed, Democrats can then return to the more sensible plan of Medicaid for all.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Hope that was tremendously informative. Obamacare, and we often forget, I'll just summarize this here, was a compromise. It was not like, you know, where even Obama started from. He was always looking for compromise. And then the Republicans are the ones that suggested this health exchange thing with the insurance companies. That was the Republicans. And now they turn around and, you know, socialism. This is the Republican compromise, which I personally think is not going to work out. I agree with Fox News on that. And the only answer is, you know, Ralph Nader and others, and now General, retired, I believe, Colin Powell came out last week in favor of single-payer universal health care. That's the only thing that's going to work out. Yes, I mean it's more government control, but it's the only thing that will reduce cost and give coverage not just to some people, but everybody, and take all this hassle away. Okay? Take all this, oh, I got to go online and there's got to be a website and then I got to make all these choices. That's the same mess we're in with prescription drug care. Okay? Whose idea was that? Republicans. Okay? Oh, you got all those choices and they're no darn good because it doesn't hold down the cost of the drugs, which are still more expensive than they need to be, more expensive than they are in Canada, and so on and so forth. So, universal, single payer. Again, all the opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, but we appreciate the ability to do that. I thought it was great news that, you know, General Colin Powell came out for the right thing, the only thing that's going to work that Ralph Nader has been talking about and many, many others. And by the way, why didn't Congress go for that if it was so good? The Democrats wouldn't even allow it to be debated and discussed because they thought, oh, it'll never pass, so we're not even going to bring it up. Why not bring it up if it's a good idea? And it is a good idea. Why? Because the other countries of the world that have lower health care and better health care, I know there's many criteria about that, than we do. Okay, less hassle, certainly. They're out there. They exist. It's happening, folks. And we could do the best of all those other universal single-payer country systems if we're going to start it. So I think it's got to migrate. It's got to go from Obamacare to that eventually. But no, Obamacare was a Republican idea. And then they turn around and say, it's socialism and it's not going to work. Of course, why did they suggest it then? That's crazy.
Well, they also be in agreement.
Yeah. Hi, Dennis. Welcome back.
Thank you.
He's walked our guest out the door. It's very courteous to do that. So we're going to have another Hightower commentary about adjunct professors, which very much unsung heroes. That'll come a little later in the hour. I wanted to, this is Jay Kornick, and you're with Dennis Reimars and John Conroy here at WHFR for another edition of the WHFR Journal. Today is Friday the 13th. Oh, I wish I didn't know that, you say. Oh, my goodness. It's always been lucky for me. luck is what you make of it, folks. Be careful. Always be careful. Don't go crazy, no matter what day it is. That's why I usually say at the end of the show, be careful out there because, stuff could happen. And if you take care and don't get too crazy in this holiday season, then everything will work out. So this is December the 13th, 2013. John Conroy has a story about, because we all want to do giving as well as receiving this holiday season. And the Times Herald in Dearborn has a story about downriver places where he could do some giving and receiving.
Oh, thank you, Jay. Also, my birthday is on the 13th of July, so 13th is always a great number for me as well.
Well, yeah. Of course.
Toys for Tots campaign has been underway for a few weeks now in Melvindale, Wyandotte, Allen Park, and Riverview, and each city has a designated donation site. Allen Park has drop-off sites at City Hall, 16850 Southfield Road, and the Fire Department, 6730 Roosevelt Avenue. Toys for Tots accepts new unwrapped toys for children from infants to 14 years old. Monetary donations can be made at toysfortots.org, and needy families also can request toys on the website. And the last day to donate to Toys for Tots is December 15th, but the Downriver Family YMCA, which is on 16777 North Line Road in Southgate, is accepting toys in exchange for discounted membership. That's a very good deal.
Yeah. Another one or two?
Yes, sir. And in Wyandotte, the Goodfellows are trying to ensure no child without a Christmas by using income from donations from the sale of its annual newspaper to support needy families with children. Lawrence Steck, councilman and Goodfellows president, said he expects the group will spend about $25,000 this year, which would allow them to help roughly 150 to 170 needy families. And then the Melvindale Police Department is also in the Christmas spirit by hosting the Shop with a Cop program.
I feel safer.
The department doesn't have a hand in the selection process, Police Lieutenant John Bajorek said, because they get a list of children from the high school and find officers to sponsor those children.
Thanks, John. You know, We've been talking about this. In fact, the article in the Dearborn Press and Guide regarding the ordinance and on whether or not people can use their garages any way they see fit. We've been talking about this for a long time. And I just read in the paper that this was in front of the Planning Commission since last February. It went to City Council. They delayed and delayed. They delayed in September and October. And I'm sure it had nothing to do with the upcoming election. And now, after the first reading had passed, it's been more than 90 days since the first reading, and the second reading has to be approved or at least addressed within that 90 days. Since it hasn't, well, guess what's going to happen, guys?
To do the first reading again.
In January.
Yeah, right, sure.
Wow. So, everybody pretty much knows about this. The point is that people are using their garages for other things other than storage or parking their cars. And something I didn't know, we were talking about cars built after, I think it was cars.
Garages built after 93.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have to have the ability to hold two cars side by side. But what I read in this article is 80% of the homes in Dearborn were prior to that, and garages were prior to that, so they're all grandfathered.
Right.
Okay, so in my mind, I was like, that doesn't sound right, but it does, realizing that there was an actual date.
But even if it's a smaller garage, it's still going to be under this new rule. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, and when we talked about the story on the show the last time, always making waves here, folks, I raised the question about whether residents have to park in their garages. And no, they don't. No. But as Dennis brought up, I remember at that show, the big problem is, and the story that's going to be in the Press and Guide this Sunday also answers the question. Maybe they're listening to us and they're answering our questions and their stories.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And that is that... there's too many people parking on the street. Most homes have at least room for two cars to park in front of the house.
Sure.
And, of course, those have to be moved on public safety days and trash days, sometimes the same day, off the street. And they also mentioned that, the corner houses frequently, and my daughter had a corner house in Dearborn a few years back, they have a short driveway. And even if they don't park the car in the garage, they park it on the driveway, the car still overlaps the sidewalk, which is not allowed
either. Which is not allowed.
Wow. Right. So where do they park the car on a trash day or a public service day if they got stuff in the garage?
Right.
Or if they have two cars?
Right.
Because their old garage only fit one car at best when it was cleaned out.
Well, what was the answer to that?
Well, yeah, the city, and I think I mentioned it on the show before, the city of Dearborn actually told them, drive it down the block and park it in the local, actually it's the Tenike administration building parking lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, those over by my house.
And that is like two blocks further west.
No kidding.
And like on a snow emergency day, in the middle of winter, you're going to have to walk two blocks through the snow to get to your car.
If you're disabled or elderly or whatever, if it's an issue?
They probably make some exceptions, but they're trying to get the cars off the street, and they're worried about property values somewhat, but it's mainly the congestion.
It's a safety issue, of course, if you have a fire or something, emergency. I had a question, though, regarding this ordinance. What if somebody wants to build, and I know this is common, a couple of my friends where we live now in South Lyon have full-blown mechanic-styled garage, so they can work on vehicles in their garage. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming only their own, because you can't have it as a business. Are they going to allow that in Dearborn, where you can use it as...
Well, they're already allowing like water and supplemental heat. It can't be a business, as you said.
Right.
I one thing that did change at the meeting this week, this is new information, folks.
Uh-oh.
Suzanne Serini, in one of her last times on the council, she raised several issues and then was voted down a couple times. But they did change the ordinance, apparently, because they had, a lot of people said, look, we've got, we put a sliding door in.
Right.
And a sliding glass door for the sake of our parties or whatever in the garage. And the city is going to allow that. At least that's the current version of the ordinance, the revised ordinance that might come up for the first reading in January. But there's going to be another meeting this coming Tuesday of the city council. That's the 17th, folks, at 7:30 p.m. at Dearborn City Hall.
Right.
Okay. So there might be some more changes. But now they're saying that the garage shall be enclosed by a non-transparent door. Enclosure by a screen or transparent door wall is not permitted. So what they're going to do is, they're probably going to change that to the the sliding door will have to be frosted or painted. It has to be opaque.
It won't be clear.
But you don't need to have a garage door that comes down from the top or comes off to the side or whatever. But if you got a sliding door, they'll probably change the ordinance so that if you want to keep it, that it still has to be opaque.
You can't just put a curtain of some kind to make it so you can't see through?
If there's a curtain, well, I don't see those. They got a lot of language
issues.
Now
we know why it's stretching until January.
If there is a curtain there, then you can't see through that entranceway, but the door itself is not opaque.
Right.
And that's what they think the rule could handle.
You know what? Every Christmas what we do is we have those spray cans of snow you do on your windows. You could do that to cover it up. I don't know.
It's great for Christmas, but I don't know about other times of the year.
That's
a good idea. So there's still going to be some more changes next week, but as Dennis said, the first reading won't be until their meeting in January, and then there'll have to be a second reading in February.
Yeah.
When I think they can take a vote at that meeting.
And, you know, when we talk about this as being such a touchy issue in election year and stuff, the reality is there is a lot that goes into this. Not only the decision, but like you said, the language and some of the details. I mean, this is something, it's affecting enough people, and it's going to be an expense to enough people that they have to think it through, I guess.
One of the most difficult things to define in a dictionary are doors and windows. I mean, you say, well, a door, something that opens and allows you to go through. Yeah, no, that's not, that could be anything.
That's not specific enough.
That's way not specific,
right,
even for dictionary definitions. Well, then list the separate definitions. I think the current editions of dictionaries, Merriam-Webster, whatever you have, there's at least 26 different specific definitions for a door.
Right.
Imagine about a garage door, you know.
Oh, man.
Or a window.
Well, I think, but when you get more specific, like, say, a garage door, I think our minds all go to the same thing, and that's not the case with, and some of the people that have their garages fixed for to live, we've all agreed that in some cases it's a cultural thing.
Yeah, in a historic district in West Dearborn, where I lived a couple decades ago, historic district, we had an historic garage. I put it up, built it new,
right,
but I wanted it to, and it was required, look like an old-time barn.
That's pretty cool.
You know, and so extra money to make it look like an old-time barn.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, they wouldn't allow me to put in old-time barn doors, that is, wood doors that fold, that actually hinge on the side.
Sure.
Big ones.
Yeah.
But that's the way barns had it, or barns had sometimes sliding doors.
Right.
That were wood, too. But the city wouldn't allow that.
What is it? You had to have a traditional?
I just had a traditional door that comes down from the top, you know, roll down door.
And it was antique looking or whatever. They made it.
It had some windows on it that looked older because they had the little cross beams in the middle of them.
It sounds expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It cost a lot more because they had to make it barn high. It's like two stories practically.
Wow.
But you can't live in the top story.
No.
Though there's a lot of storage there, but you couldn't live
there. If I hear historic district, all of a sudden I grab my wallet because it sounds like it's going to be expensive.
Well, that's one reason some people don't choose there, because they know they're restricted in what they can build, and if they want to build something, it has to be according to the guidelines of that neighborhood.
Well, the city first.
But
the
that raises the value. Most historic districts' homes are more expensive than similar homes outside those districts nearby.
Yeah.
So there's an advantage to that. So that's the story. I think we've updated that. Yeah. By the way, if you want to see them swear, I mean the swearing-in ceremony in Dearborn, it's on January 2nd. So if you've recovered by the 7 p.m. of January 2nd, go to the Michael A. Guido Theater in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. That's where there will be a swearing-in of the new Dearborn City Council and the mayor for his next term, I guess, and Kathy Buda probably, too.
They haven't done that. Okay.
No.
So I know
it's always in the new year. So.
Dearborn Heights, they swore in the mayor and the chiefs and everybody. So
okay.
There were two different takes on one, a very, very popular issue, and that's this open carry issue. I went based on the Times Herald, which came out this past Wednesday. The thing was, the meeting that took place, I believe, was actually on Monday. The meeting that the department, Dearborn Public Schools.
Yes.
And you read something very, very recent regarding this on Patch, did you not? Okay, here we go. On Patch.com, we got this. This is actually dated yesterday. And then the Dearborn Board of Education passed a resolution on Monday that will prohibit the open carry of firearms in Dearborn Public Schools. The education passed the resolution. It's a step more and more Michigan school districts seem to be taking. While it is, this is interesting, it's illegal in Michigan to openly carry a firearm in the following places. Banks, obvious one there. Places of worship, courts, theaters, sports arenas, daycare centers, hospitals, and bars. here's the clincher. While it's illegal to carry a concealed firearm on school property, Michigan law does not prohibit the open carry of firearms in schools. How do we feel about that? I mean, this.
How do we feel? Well, it's a loophole. It's obviously a loophole. When they wrote the law, they didn't think about this, just like the problems of the Dearborn garage door ordinance. but they didn't think about this. And my take on this, and it's in the story on Patch, too, is that a Democratic representative in our legislature earlier this year tried to close the loophole. And let's give credit to him, Representative Andy Schor, S-C-H-O-R, Democrat from Lansing. This was way back in January of this year. And he would have added the public schools to the list of places in Michigan where people can't openly carry firearms or concealed carry either. It never made it out of the committee. Well, who wouldn't let it out of the committee? The Republicans that controlled that committee, because Republicans control the legislature. How could that not be, my opinion here, a bipartisan issue to get rid of that? Is it that all Republicans want us to carry guns openly and concealed everywhere? Is that what we want? I don't think the majority of people in Michigan want that.
No.
And this was obviously a loophole in terms of the schools. And now each little school has to go district. And how many are in Dearborn Heights? Five, including, well, one of them is Dearborn Public Schools.
Right.
Which will change that area. But four more. They have to pass the resolution themselves to say, oh, open carry you can't do as well as concealed carry in our area. Okay. Well, just this is a negative about our legislature right now. And I know who's ever in power, whether Democrats or Republicans, you'd have some of these power plays. Well, we're not going to let that out of committee. It might make your party look good. You know, it's just crazy, and it can't happen in 2014. So anyway, Dearborn has changed their situation, and I'm not sure when that takes effect, maybe immediately.
Well, certainly this is a huge issue on the anniversary of the Sandy Hook shootings, something to really be concerned about.
Well, that's the thing. Right here in the article, the Times-Herald article, Trustee Mary Lane said, quote, who's going to be the one to approach someone walking toward or entering a school with a weapon and say, are you open carrying, or are you planning on doing something? She said, we don't know by looking if someone with a weapon is licensed or authorized to carry. There's too many unknowns there. And I have to think, though, if somebody was walking toward me, even legally holding a gun, isn't that kind of ominous? I mean, it's not something I'm used to seeing. Most of the people I know, I don't know. I'm used to getting hugged, I guess. You know?
Yeah, I think the average person, if they see open carry, is still going to call the local police department in wherever it is, even though open carry is legal in many places in Michigan and out in public. How do you feel about that? Patch.com is taking a survey, in fact, on that topic, and it's never scientific, but
no. If
you've got an idea, then why don't you go to dearborn.patch.com and find the story and voice your opinion there. I mean, some people talk of, well, teachers ought to all be trained and carry open carry weapons. Yeah, I just think a bunch of kids who outnumber the teachers gang up on them and steal the gun and start shooting the teachers or other people. You know, open carry is an invitation to steal my gun. That's what I think. You know, that's
okay.
That's a problem for me. And
I hadn't thought of it that way, but now, yeah, I can see that.
I mean, even if you have a little, like cops do, a little strap over your pistol while it's in the holster,
yeah. You
know, it's easily released. You know, that's certainly an issue, and you certainly can't have untrained people that have open carry in a school.
But it seems like more than ever recently there have been incidents, like you said, John, there have been more and more incidents in schools. And this should, I don't know, to me this is one of those, seems like a no-brainer, you know?
Of course, we have to say here, since we're on the media and we're part of radio and TV and people listen to us and then believe what we say. No, don't do that.
I don't think they do that.
No. Not,
we have our
not
fingers
us
crossed.
Anyway. Right. But even Fox News, don't believe them. MSNBC, don't believe them. Find more information and then make a more rational judgment based on more facts. Because there's always more facts out there, and that's what you need to do. But on this issue, I think we must keep in mind that, and I sound like the NRA here, but the overall number of deaths, even at schools by innocent kids, are pretty low compared to the number of kids in schools. Okay, so, you know, just because there is a single incident, a crazy person of one sort or another someplace, doesn't mean we have to change all the laws everywhere. And if you look at the details of most of the things that are proposed, they wouldn't have stopped, you know, like better mental health care. It still wouldn't have stopped certain people who weren't even identified as needing mental health care previously. So a lot of things being proposed, they all sound good, and maybe we should have, you know, better mental health care or whatever, but would it have prevented what we've already had? In most situations, the answer is no. These tragedies can still happen.
Right.
People can get guns illegally, sure. First of all, so legal licensing of guns won't happen. Or banning all guns, people still get the guns illegally. Well, in fact, we have so many guns in America, if you ban all handguns, they're still readily available anywhere you want to go. They can't go to every house and search through every box, and it's just not going to work that way. So,
well, and then of course the criminal element is the one that's going to get those guns.
Yes.
And they don't want to be on record as owning them anyway. So of course you're right; they're more readily available.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, this
let's
is
move on. But yeah, you know, it was the right thing to do to pass the anti-open carry. Why it couldn't have just been a state loophole that was closed by our legislature. Government is supposed to be doing things that are good for us and not playing partisan games. But that's still going on in Michigan. And even though I know we got some kind of budget at the federal level, they're still playing games. And so not enough has passed this year to please anybody at the federal level either. It's the least productive Congress in the history of the federal government.
Speaking of things that have passed, remember it was actually a little more than a year ago that Governor Rick Snyder, signed into law the Michigan Right to Work law.
Mm-hmm.
And something interesting happened December 6th. Teamsters Local 214 filed paperwork in Wayne County and Circuit Court saying it no longer charges $150 for non-union members to file grievances. This is a policy that ended based on a lawsuit brought on by four City of Dearborn employees. They were part of the union. Now they've resigned from the union. But it was filed on behalf of these four people, Sean Koskin, Maria Santiago Powell, Greg Andrews, and Fred Armstrong, by the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation based in Midland. Anyway, so that's no longer the policy. Everybody has no $150 fee for being a non-union member filing a grievance. I think that's a positive thing. So there we go.
Okay. If our legislature in Michigan hasn't done enough, I also have to tell you that they've now adjourned for the year.
Oh, good.
So
good for them.
They're out. They're gone.
Happy holidays.
Even earlier than the Dearborn City Council, which still is going to meet next week. No votes. Remember, we had Brian. We did a story. Brian Winston and the school board were crazed about five or six or seven bills that have would cause havoc with education statewide and especially in Dearborn. Amy Scholes, she called it micromanaging. If they want to run a school district, why don't they go and run for the school board somewhere? You know, three things we thought were going to be voted on and passed. Out of those that shouldn't have been, and it didn't happen yet. They are briefly described as EAA, Educational Authority Administration expansion, letter grade issues for the schools,
right,
instead of colors, and reader flunk bills. But that's not the concept. The total bill does much more onerous things. Okay. They didn't vote on them yet, but sure, they'll probably be back again in January. And try to pass those, along with the other things that the our district and our school board here in Dearborn says, oh, no, please don't do this. And, of course, who's in charge of that? The Republicans, that your local representatives, George Durrani and Morris Hood in the Senate, Durrani in the legislature, they're not for these. They're totally against them. So don't write your legislators. I'd say write the governor or somebody and look up these issues. I'm sure there's some information maybe on the Dearborn Schools website.
Yes, yes. You're listening to the new WHFR Journal with Jay, Dennis, and John. And we have...
Jim Hightower is going to talk about the unsung heroes, the adjunct professors in college, near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Know a couple of those.
We'll be right back.
There's a growing army of the working poor in our U.S. of A., and big contingents of it are now on the march. They're strategizing, organizing, and mobilizing against the immoral economics of inequality being hung around America's neck by the likes of Walmart, McDonald's, and colleges. Wait a minute. Colleges? You go there to get ahead in life. More education makes you better off, right? Well, ask a college professor about that. You know, the ones who earn PhDs and are now teaching America's next generation? The sorry secret of higher education, from community colleges to brand-name universities, is that they've embraced the corporate culture of a contingent workforce, turning professors into part-time, low-paid, no-benefit, no-tenure, temporary teachers. Overall, more than half of America's higher ed faculty members today are, quote, adjunct professors, meaning they are attached to the school but not essentially a part of it. It also means that these highly educated, fully credentialed professors have become part of America's army of the working poor. They never know until a semester starts whether they'll teach one class, three, or none. Typically, this leaves them with take-home pay somewhere between zero and maybe $1,000 a month. Poverty. Adjuncts usually get no benefits, no real chance of earning full-time positions, no due process or severance pay if dismissed, no say in curriculum or school policies, not even office space. Like their counterparts at Walmart and McDonald's, adjunct college professors are not treated as valuable resources to be nurtured, but as cheap, exploitable, and disposable labor. This is Jim Hightower saying, unsurprisingly, this contingent of the low-wage army is organizing too. For information, contact New Faculty Majority at www.newfacultymajority.info.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
You know, adjunct professors who do a lot of prep work and they have advanced degrees, they're paid, the McDonald's people, what do they want, $15 an hour?
Yes.
Walmart people would like minimum wage $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the adjuncts, when you look at their prep time and outside of class, they're making about $12 an hour. When they're and teaching a whole semester of like 47 hours in a class, and it has been that way for years. They're making nowhere near what the full-time people make, and we're down to here at Henry Ford Community College, I think maybe less than 20% of our total teaching staff are so-called full-time, and we, you know, we get nice benefits and we can afford to buy a house, but the adjuncts, it's a terrible situation. It's exploitation of people who, in fact, are highly motivated, highly skilled, some of the best and brightest, and, you know, they get 25% an hour raise maybe every 10 years or something.
But unlike the fast food workers, and specifically the fast food workers who want $15 an hour, if the adjuncts get more money, it's not going to upset the apple cart. I mean, there's some really, really good stuff written about why if you paid $15 an hour to fast food workers, it would completely change the whole paradigm of them, and it would the prices would go up. It wouldn't be cheap food anymore. But it's not the case here with education. I do want to talk a little bit about education and how it relates to a new program from the state. The state announced a new plan to help employers find their next generation of workers this past Wednesday, and Henry Ford Community College will be one of its centers. The Michigan Economic Development Corps Career Jump Start program will help community colleges match training and other curriculum offerings to the demands of employers' greatest needs. Basically, Henry Ford's working with 10 other community colleges nationwide. I'm sorry, within the state, because it's the MEDC, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Why do I keep calling it a corporation? The Michigan Economic Development Corps.
Don't call it a corpse.
Yeah, it's a corpse.
Because that's something dead in a box, I believe.
Basically, what they're doing is they're matching. It's almost like a mentoring program where if kids have a specific interest or if they want to look more into a program, they can actually take a tour of a business, and they'll have the business leaders and the community leaders to help them there. So this is a great start. It's called the Jump Start Program, and we're taking part of it here right at the college.
I'd just like to go back over some of the newspapers from last week and just hit some headlines, if you will. Check out the Dearborn Pressing Guide from December 8th. That's last week, Sunday. Their editorial, that is the editorial of the Dearborn Pressing Guide, has a great explanation and support for the drive to build a new animal shelter in Dearborn. Again, that organization, the city pays a small amount of money, and that almost all the funds are raised by the nonprofit organization, the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, volunteer group to operate, and they do a fantastic job. And we've got animals that need to get homes and need to get health services and need, you know, we have to have a new shelter in Dearborn, and hope that you all can contribute and help somewhere. And for the holidays, what would be better than maybe adopting a pet from, well, wherever your local shelter is? But the Dearborn Animal Shelter has certainly got great people and great pets, and they need homes. Okay, moving on. Let's see. Now I'm just hitting some other headlines. Dearborn Times Herald mentioned briefly about their one of their columnists, Dan Gretzner, that he passed away in the last week or so. And he was their sports columnist, wrote some sports stories, too, for them in recent years. He also helped WHFR a couple years ago put together a benefit evening at a club in Wyandotte. And so thank you for that, the memory of Dan Gretzner. But he actually was Dan Gretzner Sr., Dan Gretzner II. His son actually was part of WHOR, was a DJ here a couple decades ago, you know, but and haven't seen that Dan Gretzner recently. But our sympathies to the Gretzner family, especially because of their WHFR connection. We can't do all the people that died on the air, because people are dying all the time, I'm sorry to say. But they had a connection not only to the newspaper, his dad did, but also his dad and his son with WHFR. Okay. There's an editorial in the Dearborn Pressing Guide from this last Wednesday. They're totally against cutting Detroit pension benefits. They say it would set an awful precedent across the country. And as someone who's on a pension, I have to say, I agree. You can't have us plan our lives. Even the best highly motivated people, we plan our lives knowing how much money is going to be there. And then after we're retired and can't get another job or anything, you're going to cut it? And you're going to cut it a lot? That's just wrong. You say, well, they're in bankruptcy. Everything's on the table. Shouldn't be pensions. Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be, shouldn't be, shouldn't be. I'm sorry. And I agree, and thank you, Dearborn Press and Guide. Also, there's an op-ed that is an editorial by someone other than who's working for the paper, Michelle Saad, S-A-A-D. One of her children was denied a book to be checked out to them at the school library, and it's a problem in Dearborn. They won't let a student check out a book that's identified as being of a higher reading level.
It's ridiculous.
Like the third grade level. This, I think it was a second grade child wanted to check out on their own initiative
right. A
book that was at a higher level, and they were absolutely forbidden that. And in fact, Michelle talks about how her child was somewhat traumatized by that.
Traumatized by not being allowed
to read.
Yeah.
By being like it was a terrible thing that she asked for a book, even though there were words that maybe she didn't quite understand.
Wow.
But it's not like asking for an adult book with pornography or vampirism or something. It's a school library, for Pete's sake.
Right.
And
you would think everything in there is appropriate.
It's an extended op-ed. I hope people on the Dearborn Board of Ed and the other local boards read that. I hope they change that policy. They'll be more traumatized if they don't know the words. I don't think so. Okay, no. Education needs to be a challenge.
How else do you improve if you don't read up in your levels?
Well, and, you wait for next year, John.
Well,
yeah, that's crazy. She points out the standardization, which is not right for everyone. Those that can advance should be allowed and given extra assignments, extra work, and more challenging assignments to keep them interested. I was valedictorian in my class. I was so bored for all my years in high school because I wasn't challenged except by two or three special teachers that gave me extra work with extra material that I loved because it kept my brain functioning, you know. It's true. I was reading and thinking and writing and doing math way above the people in my grade. It's not my fault, okay? Why should I, I was thinking of running away from home. I really was.
Really?
Because school was so boring. I wanted to get to college. In fact, when I got to college finally, I said, oh, my world is complete.
I'm home.
They will let me study and learn and teach me and challenge me.
Let you, make you.
And I can choose the classes. I can choose the more challenging classes, sure, too. And, oh, I was so, I mean, I love education, obviously, being a teacher, too. But we don't want to hold anybody back. And that's the wrong kind of education.
When you were in high school, did they have advanced placement programs?
Yes, and I actually did take an English class that was actually taught in my high school by Eastern Michigan University.
Okay.
They actually sent a teacher down, and for those of us that were qualified and wanted to, we could just go to a certain room in the school building and take the advanced, actually it wasn't advanced placement, it was the class.
So
they enrolled us in Eastern Michigan, but only for that one class. So we actually directly all of a sudden had an Eastern Michigan transcript that had English comp class with a grade on it by the time we went to college.
So just be that freshman comp.
It was freshman comp. Yeah.
No kidding.
Right.
And you already had, well, that's the equivalent. If you take the AP test, then you would have foregone that class anyway.
Yeah.
So that's the same
But you have
result.
To go take the test. In this case, there was no extra test. It was already officially certified.
We got a couple more things.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so... We covered that. John, I understand there's big snow, or at least 4 to 6 inches by tomorrow. It's supposed to start about 9 p.m. tonight, folks. And if you're listening to this as a podcast from WHFR.FM, maybe it turned out to be nothing.
Sure.
But there's supposed to be maybe a buildup of maybe 4 to 6 inches by Saturday afternoon, early evening. And Road and Track Magazine sent me an email today. 8 ways to avoid a winter pileup. Just go down them quickly. Some are logical, folks, but you don't want to have an accident on the roads.
Yes, from Road and Track, 8 ways to avoid a winter pileup. Number 1, slow down.
Mm.
If conditions get wet, cold, and especially if you can't see well, dial back your speed a few notches. Number 2, traction is everything. You control your vehicle with steering, braking, and acceleration. Number 3, keep on top of the weather. Most places in the continental U.S. occasionally experience cold snaps, so ice and snow can become a problem faster than you think. Number 4, assume that other drivers are amateurs. This really depends on where you live, but unless you're in some tiny Minnesota town where you're acquainted with everyone and know who can drive like a Scandinavian ice racer, don't give others the benefit of the doubt. Number 5, check your tires. Number 6, four-wheel drive doesn't give you superpowers. Number 7, practice makes perfect. If you live somewhere where it snows a lot or at all, it's not a bad idea to find a vacant parking lot in which to practice driving in the white stuff. Number 8, plan for the worst. This is particularly true if you live in a cold place.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John. I think those are logical, but keep them in mind, okay? And I just have a new four-wheel drive car, a small little Jeep, it's pretty basic, but it's four-wheel drive, I hit an icy patch in Allen Park. Apparently, they have the iciest streets in Michigan. Don't ask why. I don't know why. And so I come to a four-way stop, and I don't stop. And I got my foot pushed down on the brakes, and the ABS is pumping. But I discovered because of ABS, I can steer. So I just turned the corner. Even though I'm still got my foot on the brakes as hard as it'll go, but I wouldn't stop, and I didn't want to cut anybody else off, so I just turned all the way to the right. And because ABS does not stop your wheels from turning, I actually was able to steer it.
Maybe at a little higher speed than you wanted, right?
Well, I shouldn't have been going, but it, you know, was one of those like black ice.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't think there was any ice there. It didn't look like it. It was asphalt road top, so it all looked shiny anyway. Okay, Dennis, quick story to benefit the Historical Museum.
This is wonderful. The Best Dearborn Stories, Voices from Henry Ford's Hometown, Volume 3 is out. And the book is a fundraiser for the Guild, the Museum Guild of Dearborn, which, of course, benefits the museums composed of the McFadden Ross House, Gardner House, Commandant's Quarters, and the Administrative and Storage
Where can
areas.
They get it?
They can get it. It's a 1995. You can get it at the McFadden Ross House itself on Brady there, Henry Ford Centennial Library on Michigan Avenue, and the City Clerk's Office in the Concourse of City Hall on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, a great stocking stuffer. Okay,
awesome.
It is $20. But, again, it's benefiting Historical Museum and all their facilities. So
Edited by David Good and Glenn O'Cray.
Yeah, Glenn O'Cray, former financial aid officer. Hi, Glenn. Here at Henry Ford Community College, good friend.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we have come to the hour. We're waiting for Highway 61 and Joanne Korczynska to arrive at the station. This is WHFR Dearborn. I wanted to go back to the book we started last week, The 12 Terrors of Christmas.
Funny stuff.
Written by John Updike. Again, this is not terrorism, but it's just sort of cynical or ironic insights about the holidays. So thank you, John Conroy. Thank you, Dennis Reimars.
Thank you, Jay Cornick.
For being part
of this. Thank
you, Jay. We'll say goodbye again, probably. But here's number 4 out of the 12. And next week is our last show before Christmas.
Yeah.
So I'll have to maybe sneak even more in if we're going to get to big number 12. But okay, O Tannenbaum, which I believe is the German word for Christmas tree.
Right.
Okay. O Tannenbaum. Suppose it topples over under its weight of bomb-shaped baubles. Suppose it harbors wood borers, which will migrate to the furniture. There is something ghastly about a tree. Its look of many-limbed paralysis, its shaggy and conscienceless aplomb encountered in the open, let alone in the living room. At night, you can hear it rustling and slurping water out of the bucket. That's, of course, a live tree that was cut down for
yes.
your living room. I don't know too many plastic trees that slurp. Okay, number 5.
You got to pay a little more, but...
Yeah. Something to be terrified over. Tiny reindeer. Hooves that cut through roof shingles like linoleum knives. Unstable flight patterns suggesting to at least one observer, quote, dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, unquote. Fur possibly laden with disease-bearing ticks. That's why you're worried about those reindeer. Number 6, electrocution. It's not just the frayed strings of lights anymore or the corroded transformer of the plucky little Lionel. It's all those battery packs, those electronic games, those built-in dictionaries, those robots a-sizzle with artificial intelligence. Even the tinsel tingles this year. And isn't it somehow terrible the way shed tinsel shivers in the gloomy, ice-clogged gutters?
Yes.
We still have time?
Yeah, one more. Joanne's here, but she's mm-hmm. okay. finding things.
Podcast will still go on to another minute, I think, so I don't want to cut anybody out of this. Again, the book is The 12 Terrors of Christmas by John Updike. Number 7, The Carols. They boom and chime from the vaulted ceilings of supermarkets and discount malls, and yet the spirits keep sinking. Have our hearts grown so terribly heavy since childhood? What has happened to us? Why don't they ever play our favorites? What were our favorites? Tum ta dum tum. Angels on high, something, something sky. Okay, I'm going to stop at number 7. So we still have, we got 5 to go for next week. That's possible. It's doable. Okay. I was just going to say, I feel that way when I go to Fairlane Town Center for my mall walk. Most every day of the week, these great, anthems to Christmas, and why don't they play my favorites? Of course, I listen to WHFR a lot, the station making waves, of course, we're going to have a lot of alternative choices on December 24th and 25th. We've pre-recorded a whole bunch of shows. John, are you on one of them?
Yes, we are.
There? And Dennis, are you on a show?
Well, you were thinking of the holiday greenings. Oh, we haven't greenings. Done a show.
Oh, I haven't done a show yet, but that's okay. Well, nonetheless, we have a whole bunch of shows that are going to rotate that many of our staff members have recorded, and it's definitely alternative holiday music.
Oh, yeah.
It's music that's great, but you probably haven't heard these before because they're not on the PA system at Fairlane Mall.
One of my favorites, I can't wait to fish again. It must be Christmas in Michigan. And there's a whole song of that. It's called Christmas in Michigan. Listen, I want to say before we go, if you ordered a Dearborn City calendar by the deadline, October 31st, you should be getting it no later than today. You may already have it.
Yeah, I have mine already.
Did you get yours?
Yeah.
Now, if you did not order it, you can go and pick it up at City Hall, business hours 8 to 5.
And it's free.
It's free. It's available now. They will not be mailing anymore if you miss the deadline. And so, if you don't want to get out, if the big snowstorm hits tomorrow and it takes us all the way through the